Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Mary Agnes Carey from Kaiser Health News. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You sound great. What happened yesterday?
Well, yesterday the Senate voted to proceed to the debate on their long-awaited plan from the Republicans to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Last night they had a vote on a replacement bill that included a couple of things that have been heavily watched here. One was an amendment from Ted Cruz that said if an insurer offered plans that were compliant with the Affordable Care Act, they could also have other plans that were not. And there was $100 billion in that bill. Rob Portman, who's a senator from Ohio, wanted that to take people from the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act and put them into private insurance. Those were two key changes, but it went down. It lost. It did not get enough people to pass it, and it had 9 Republicans vote with the Democrats to defeat it. So that has come into today. There's been much debate about a clean repeal measure. That's been delayed to about 3:30 because of some procedural hurdles. That is also expected not to pass. And so the next move may be what they call a skinny repeal bill, which would simply repeal the individual and employer mandates in the bill and also the medical device tax that's on the medical device industry on those devices. So that may be the next things coming, but it's important for people to know that things can change at any time because this is the Senate.
But you just described a measure by Ted Cruz that didn't pass, but John McCain cast the deciding vote on a measure that did what?
That allowed the Senate to begin debate. It's called the motion to proceed. And so a senator could, in theory, say, as Senator McCain did when he spoke, I don't like the existing bill, and I'm not going to vote for it without changes, but I will permit the Senate to begin debate. It's a procedural motion. And it was very heavily watched because the thought was, would Republicans even have enough of their own votes to begin debate? You might remember last week they didn't.
Oh, sure. Well, that was the way it was being handicapped, that they can't even get this done. But I'm confused. If Republicans control the Senate, even if they don't like the version of the House bill or their own bill, wouldn't they want to have some sort of debate? Why was it thought that this measure wouldn't pass?
Because you had some Republicans like Susan Collins of Maine or Lisa Murkowski of Alaska that really disliked the underlying bill. They dislike it so much they didn't even want the chamber to vote on it. It's kind of a philosophical split, right? You either say, I dislike the bill and I don't even want the chamber to begin to debate it, so I vote against motion to proceed, or you say, I don't like the bill, or maybe you do like the bill. We need to get going as a party, as a Republican party in the Senate. We need to debate this. It was very clear that Democrats would not vote for the motion to proceed. So this is where all those Republican votes were so critical. The Republicans only have 52 Republicans in their majority in the Senate. Mm-hmm. They lost 2, and that's why Vice President Pence had to come in, sit in the presiding chair, and cast that vote that allowed debate to begin.
But that measure, to me, seems to be logical, and yet the way it was pitched, I think generally in the media, is that it was extraordinary what they were doing here to keep this failed bill alive. It doesn't strike me as being heavy-handed, but I've been told that it was.
Well, I think I would go back to the earlier statement that you made, because your common sense would say, my goodness, if Republicans control the chamber, surely they wouldn't have a problem with their own party beginning debate. But they did, because there's great dissension within the ranks on how to move forward on an ACA repeal, right? Partial repeal, full repeal, replace, don't replace, do it now, do it in 2 years. So it's really a herding cats exercise for Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader.
Yeah, okay. So, but they at least were able to do this, but it then also makes it sound like they're not going to be very successful because they barely even agreed to talk about it. Now they're talking about it. And is it something large or, like you were describing a moment ago, piecemeal? Well, what about whether or not insurance companies can offer non-compliant policies? Is it going to be little components that they'll vote on along the way now?
Well, so far we've had the we just talked about the Cruz Amendment and the Rob Portman money was for Medicaid to go into private insurance. that was part of a more comprehensive bill, right? Now they're on the repeal and replace, complete repeal, rather, of the bill without an immediate replacement. So if we move now to this discussion of the skinny bill, which simply repeals employer mandate, individual mandate, and the medical device tax, it gets more of the piecemeal strategy you're talking about. And then the next thing to watch, tomorrow is something that's predicted to happen tomorrow. It's called the Votorama, where Democrats and Republicans can
They don't really call it the Votorama, do they?
Sure we do.
Promise me that health care is not hanging in the balance of a Votorama.
Any bill under the reconciliation process hits the Votorama at some point. It can go, it's a consecutive voting. Amendments are quickly introduced. There's not a lot of debate. They've got to vote on it. But that's where the Democrats are really going to try to put the Republicans on the hot seat. Do you want to fund the cost-sharing subsidies? Try to get them to do certain things to stabilize the markets. Republicans may or may not. Point being, you might get more of this piecemeal strategy tomorrow that you're talking about.
Well, if you pass a measure that eliminates the mandate or the tax, then doesn't the whole thing fall apart anyway? Now you don't have the funding for it ever.
Well, that's what a lot of analysts are saying. They're very concerned about if you got rid of an individual mandate, right? What isn't the incentive for anybody to get in before they get sick? But the thing to remember is if the Senate passed, we'll just call it the skinny amendment, which is sort of the moniker it's gotten here in D.C. If that passes, it's got to go back to the House of Representatives. It's very different than the bill the House of Representatives passed. And some sort of compromise measure would have to come forward because I doubt very much that House Republicans would accept a scaled-back bill.
Maybe that's why Scaramouche, can you do the Fandango? And by the way, that's the only way I'm going to be able to say that guy's name. Maybe that's why he said that this is not going to happen in a hurry. Please don't think it's a panacea or that it's fast. This is going to be laborious. And I suppose you would agree with that, huh, Mary Agnes?
Yeah, I think this could go on for quite a while.
And what's your expectation? But we still have Obamacare, right? And we're going to have Obamacare or not?
Until the Senate or the House were to agree on a measure that repealed the full law or repealed pieces of it, the Affordable Care Act remains in place. But another thing to think about is that the Trump administration administrates this law. They are the ones that oversee it. So, for example, there was some money last week that was taken out of the next open enrollment period for navigators and other folks that help you understand how to enroll. There are many twists and turns that the Trump administration can take in as they oversee the law that could also change it in a variety of ways.
Make it difficult to use, yeah. What were you thinking, Steve?
That actually was my question. You hear about them so-called sabotaging what still exists, and I just wondered if they are doing that or what it is that they could be doing. So maybe the question was just answered.
Well, they could, for example, a lot of discussion about these cost-sharing subsidies that help like 60% of the people on the exchanges with their out-of-pocket costs. They could decide, for example, not to fund them. Or they could say, we will fund them a month at a time, which creates a lot of uncertainty in the market. They might not really enforce this individual mandate as it's on the books. That could create some uncertainty. And we talked about the enrollment funds, for example, and not really going into these. There will be some counties where insurers won't participate. Those numbers are starting to come out now. The Obama administration would go after insurers and say, hey, can you help us out? Will you enroll people here? Will you do business here? I don't think the Trump administration is going to go that route.
All I hear from you is things that aren't going to happen or that are going to be dismantled. Tell me what they want to happen. Tell me something that they are going to do that's going to make health care or health costs better.
The goal is exactly as you say, to reduce premiums, to reduce high out-of-pocket costs, to reduce deductibles. But then that's where that commonality of purpose, how you get there, is there are all these different routes that people agree or disagree on or like or don't like, have differences of opinion. But overall, people would very much like all of us to pay less for our health care, looking at increased premiums, looking at increased out-of-pocket costs, that kind of thing. That is a common purpose but how you get there is where the divide is.
Well, I have a guess how you get there. You offer crappy insurance that can offer those sorts of economic incentives, but it's not very good insurance. You said that, for instance, they want to be able to allow companies that offer compliant policies, also non-compliant policies. My guess is those would be less expensive. That might be attractive to people who got to have insurance, and then lo and behold, they don't have much coverage. But that would reduce costs, right?
It would reduce costs, and to be fair, throughout my coverage of the Affordable Care Act since it became law in 2010, I've heard numerous people tell me, I don't want all these things, all these coverages that are in the Affordable Care Act. They had plans before that didn't have them. You're a single man, you don't want maternity coverage, for example, or you may not care about pediatric coverage or some of the other services. But again, to your point, if you have a broader, more comprehensive policy, it does tend to cost more. But if you get a scaled back policy, you might find it doesn't cover what you need when you need it.
But right now we're funding those sorts of things for everybody, right? Men are paying premiums that include coverage for prenatal care, are we not?
That's right. Most of us, yes, through your employer. Most of us get insurance from our employer, or if you are in a ACA plan, yes, you would be covering all.
And is that question in play then? I mean, this sounds like that Bill of Rights, the 10 points that Obamacare wanted to make sure we all had. Are we talking about saying, okay, guys, you can buy a policy that will never include prenatal care because you're never going to need it? Is that something that's in the offing?
It's in the offing, but it was part of, that was Ted Cruz's amendment, part of his plan, and it just got defeated yesterday. So it may have been defeated because it was part of a package that people disliked other provisions, but the very concern about that is if you segment the market that way, you might also segment very healthy people, very sick people.
Oh, you think?
Drives up the premiums for the sick folks.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? I have parents. Trust me. I know what kind of medical expenses 80-year-olds have or their 50-year-old adult children. And it's a lot more than healthy, whip-snap 25-year-olds who don't want to pay high premiums because they don't use much medical coverage. But that's not how it works, kids. We're all in this together, or we're not at all. At least that's the way I thought. You don't have to talk now. I'm just going to let that sit there.
Yeah, you're rolling. Just keep rolling.
Yeah. Well, Joe has a question for you. Hey, Joe, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. My question is just this. Why does the government not force the insurance industry and the medical industry to bring costs down in this country, because we pay so much more than any other country on the planet for the same exact stuff?
Hey, that's a great question, Joe. What about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that has been a question. It's been out there. We don't have any kind of price controls. We don't say that this is all you can charge or, that kind of thing from a government standpoint. I think insurers are trying to get at it with their medical providers, their doctors, and their hospitals, and this kind of thing, in the sense of negotiating discounts. But our editor-in-chief here at Kaiser Health News, Elizabeth Rosenthal, has written a phenomenal book looking at healthcare costs, examining all these factors, and how, even if you've got competition in a marketplace, it doesn't drive down costs. It's just a fascinating question.
We've all talked to her about that. Thank you, Joe. Great question, and we'll spend more time on that another day. But we're kind of missing the boat here, aren't we? That's what we got to do. I mean, that would take care of all these other insurance problems if we just make medical care, pharmaceuticals, for instance, less expensive, right, Mary Agnes?
Well, that is a concern from many Democrats. I've heard some Republicans talk about it. When you look at some of the increases in the prices of generic drugs, or a drug like ephedrine that's put in an EpiPen, which is a different delivery device, but why is that so expensive? Traditional drugs and new delivery devices. Why do drug makers charge what they charge? I mean, this is one of those areas that actually, of all the things you talk about in healthcare, you might get more bipartisanship on that very issue than the others we've been talking about.
Stay well, Mary Agnes Carey. Thanks for helping us out again this afternoon. We'll call you another day.
Great. Thanks for having me.